We'll leave you with a little bit of nastiness this hour. The internet has become an emotional wildlife preserve for meanness. I suppose we're not telling you anything new. Where anger, speech that could not survive in face-to-face encounters, and bullying all find a safe zone of anonymity and brashness. Listen to this. How do these mean tweets from trolls to female sports reporters sound when spoken out loud?
So I have to read all of them, right? Because, I mean, I don't...
Read them, I guess.
I hope you get raped again.
Oh.
You need to be hit in the head with a hockey puck and killed.
That's a very small sampling from the hashtag More Than Mean folks. This week, our friends at Retro Report look at the outrage machine, they're calling it. Television, they say, created the first safe zones for mob shaming, with the shouting and fighting audiences on daytime shows like Ricky Lake, Maury Povich, Montel Williams, and the bishop of meanness himself, Jerry Springer. Those shows, according to Retro Report producer Bonnie Bertram, lead directly to the cruel online attacks on the parents of the two-year-old boy snatched by an alligator at Disney World.
This happened so soon after that woman whose child got into the gorilla pen at the Cincinnati Zoo, and she was just vilified. But there was a contingent of people who said, wait a minute, this poor mother was doing her best, we shouldn't all pile on. And I thought, oh, great, this is going to be a moment of reset, a moment for everybody to sort of take a pause and say, is this really fair to heap all this sort of judgment and condemnation on this mother? But then here we are, what, 2 weeks later, and the same thing is happening to this family who just lost their son in Orlando.
Is there a history here, and is there a way to tune it out, which probably is what you would want to do if you were this family?
Well, it's interesting. In this Retro Report, we sort of studied where some of the origins of this might have come into play, and we thought about audiences that sort of enjoyed having the sort of moral condemnation, like Jerry Springer. We talked about talk radio and Rush Limbaugh and the sort of level of conversation and accusations that were made. And there is this history, and we even dated it back to the Scarlet Letter.
All the shows tried to be like Oprah.
A lot of people have problems with in-laws who come and don't know how to go home.
Go after middle-aged housewives. And then along came Ricky Lake. And hers was really the first talk show to go after the kids. Young people are much more open about their lifestyles, much wilder. It just struck me as a business model, so we did that.
Let me see if I have this right. You're sleeping with you're having sex with your grandson?
Yes, sir.
And there's Jerry Springer as historian and producer of this kind of predation. And, you know, the Scarlet Letter is the sort of moral code that's from Nathaniel Hawthorne. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the mechanisms of television and the internet take this to a different level.
They absolutely do. I mean, it's almost as though now there's a script, a mechanism that triggers, sometimes usually inadvertently, this whole scenario where people just get made into public enemy number one, and oftentimes really by no fault of their own.
I mean, of course there's no fault of their own, because the extremes of the attack have nothing to do with court, crime, anything that we would associate with traditional justice.
Well, it's interesting, too, when you really look at these things, there's a lot of what I would say sort of identity verification going on. Like with the dentist in Minnesota who killed Cecil the Lion.
Right.
So there are a lot of people who are like, I'm an animal lover and I'm going to show you my credentials as an animal lover by trashing this guy because of what he did. Now, what he did is hardly defensible. But at the same time, did it really warrant people publishing his home address and saying they were going to kill him, kill his family? There seems to be a sort of limitless acceptance of what's possible.
There's also a cycle of outdoing the previous message, the post. For instance, one could say, oh, I'm so sad that Cecil died. How can you live with yourself, Mr. Dentist? But then the next post has to be, how can you live with yourself? Hey, what if I came over to your house and shot you? Then the next post is, hey, we're going to do that. Here's the address. So that fuels this as much as anything.
Yes, it absolutely does. And we talked to this privacy expert named Danielle Citron, who's really an expert in this. And she talks about how that mob mentality and the one-upsmanship that plays out in the comments section or on Facebook or on Twitter is really damaging.
Set up the case of Jennifer Connell as an example of what you're talking about here.
So Jennifer Connell was at her cousin's son's birthday party, And when he saw her from across the lawn, he ran up to greet her. He never hugged her. He ran up to greet her, and she fell over backwards and broke her wrist. The injury required 3 surgeries, and her cousin had homeowner's insurance. So under Connecticut law, and Connecticut's not alone, I think there are 17 other states that have this policy, if you can't come to terms with the homeowner's insurance policy, you have to name someone in a lawsuit to sort of trigger the whole process of getting the homeowner's insurance to weigh in. So her lawyers said you have to name the child because that's just the way it's going to work. It's a simple case of protocol.
They thought, administrative detail.
Right. So she goes to court, and a reporter who thinks this is going to be, you know, a page 4 story, no big deal, heard her on the stand, and she's an English major. She has a way with words that's quite descriptive. And so to describe an injury of how it hurt when her hand was bent backwards, she described how it hurt to hold a plate carrying hors d'oeuvres at a cocktail party. So the reporter suddenly doesn't see this as a protocol story about how to get insurance to pay for something. He sees this Upper East Side Manhattanite complaining about the pain of holding a cocktail plate at a party. And suddenly it does become something very different than an insurance lawsuit.
Well, it's a lawsuit that's all in the family.
Oh, listen to this.
The family relative suing a boy over an accident at his birthday party when he turned 8.
She says he broke her wrist, caused her pain and mental anguish.
She claimed that her little nephew gave her a, quote, forceful hug.
Now, this is cable television sort of being the shark feed.
Well, some of that was network news, I have to tell you.
Well, television.
It was period. Television. Yes, it was television. But what happened was it was first picked up by a local Connecticut paper in their online edition, and then it spun out into national news and, in fact, even international news. And then suddenly everybody was chiming in online that she was this horrible person and a horrible aunt going after her nephew's money. It was really quite stunning to see.
Among the people that you talk to who kind of track the societal consequences of this sort of thing, how important is this both in terms of the, you know, shaming that we don't see that happens, you know, in middle schools or high schools, and the quickness with which something can become a national scandal and then poof, go away?
Well, the problem is that it doesn't really go away, because if you go to Google and you search Jennifer Connell's name, this will forever be linked with her. It's going to be very hard for her to escape this. So it might cycle through the news cycle and not be on everybody's, you know, not making national news anymore. But online, that trail lasts forever. It's really permanent.
Permanent scars from online predation. Bonnie Bertram took a look at this issue as a producer for Retro Report. Thanks so much.
Sure.